Good evening, friends. Glad to see you tonight. We're going to keep doing this for a little while on Wednesday nights. We started last week when we announced we were going to take some prophets and just pick whatever tidbit I thought was interesting about them and try to develop that element. Hopefully something we hadn't thought of very much about these particular people. And so we'll continue with this on for a little while longer. We began with Moses last week. Most people do not think of Moses immediately as a prophet, even though the Bible says he is. Deuteronomy 18 makes it very clear that Moses was indeed a prophet. And of course, I don't think we'd get too many arguments here about that. We looked at the evolution of his call, really, and saw him from his position of contentedness to God waking him up one day by the burning bush and setting him on the brand new course at the very time in his life when he would just as soon have just kept tending the sheep and staying home. But God had other plans. We're going to look at something a little bit similar tonight at the man Samuel. Let's take our Bibles and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 8, please. 1 Samuel chapter 8. When I first got saved and when I first started in the ministry, I spent almost my whole life in 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st, 2nd Kings, and absolutely loved it. Just loved particularly 1st and 2nd Samuel. I can't believe I've never done anything in those books, probably because I did so much in those early years, but I would love to go through them again. Let me just introduce you to a phrase, and then we'll try to develop the phrase. Verse 1 of 1 Samuel chapter 8, it says, "And it came to pass when Samuel was old." Samuel's an old man by the time we reach 1 Samuel chapter 8. Reminds me of a book in my library. I just was fiddling around and I came across this passage, and it reminded me of a book in my library by the president, one of the ex-presidents of Wheaton College, when Wheaton was actually a Christian school, Dr. Raymond Edmond. He actually died in the pulpit, this man. He was preaching in chapel at Wheaton College and died during the sermon. An amazing, amazing story there. But Raymond Edmond had a book. He had many books, actually. One of them is called The Disciplines of Life. And there's a chapter in that book entitled The Discipline of Declining Days. And he quotes a man in there that made the comment that few Christians end well. And I would beg to differ with that. I think if you're a Christian, you're probably going to end well. It's people that are not Christians that think they are, that make believe that they don't end well. But the end of life should be a glorious time, especially for a believer. I truly believe that. We use some very lovely words to describe our declining years, or a man's declining years of life, which talk about the the even tide, and you talk about the sunset of life. The whole word sunset conjures up a very lovely picture, at least in my mind it does. There should be a sunset glory to the end of a believer's life in any dispensation, whether Old Testament, New Testament, it really shouldn't matter. So I wonder, what does the Bible have to say about this topic? I think it has a whole great deal to say, and we won't peruse the whole gamut of it tonight, not even close. But I want to note about what happened to this man, Samuel, how he finished, and some things about him. First of all, we want to look at, I'm not trying to be too flowery here, I'm really not. I'm trying to be devotional, trying to get us off the hardcore, you know, where you have to just work your brain to death. But when you think about a sunset, you think about the fact of shadows. So let's talk about that, the shadows of the sunset. Now, if you're like me, you've seen some amazing sunsets in your life, particularly here in the West, because this is where the sun sets in the West, and the West Coast of the United States, I think, excels in that. Really, anything west of the Rockies is going to be a good deal. I've seen a lot of different sunsets, but none like I've seen in Tucson, Arizona. I had a roommate in Dallas when I was working on a different kind of a degree, long, long time ago, back in my early 20s even. I was 21. And he was from Tucson, I was from New Jersey, and we got along fairly well, Galen. In fact, he's still one of the most highly successful women softball coaches in Arizona, I found out. But to make a long story short, I went and visited him on my way to the West Coast. I was moving and got a glimpse of the most spectacular sunset I've ever seen in my life. I'll never forget it. Obviously, I never forgot it. It stands out as number one. I could hardly believe my eyes when I saw this thing. It was like God just came down out of heaven and just did a Rembrandt in the air. Personally, the whole sky was just aflame with color, and the whole thing was absolutely stupendous. But the one thing that I've always noticed about sunsets is that their beauty is dependent on a couple of things. For example, if it's just a beautiful, cloudless day, the sun will set, but it's not going to be nearly as spectacular as if there are clouds in the sky. The clouds actually help to paint the strokes of the brush and add to the splendor. When the sun's setting in a clear sky, all you get is the clear sky. You don't really get a whole lot of variety. But when it does so amidst these various clouds, especially, I think, cirrus nearest, they say, you can get really quite a show. Very beautiful thing. But the point is that I'm speaking metaphorically here, and I'm going to apply it to Samuel. There could be shadows amid the glory of a sunset, and there often is. When we look at the quote-unquote sunset years in the life of Samuel, we find that there are two areas where the shadows were dark. First of all, we can see the work that seemed to have to be almost forgotten. And notice verse 5 of chapter 8. It says, they said unto him, "Behold, thou art old. Thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the other nations." What do you think of that? Thou art old. Make us a king. There are times where a statement can be a very heartless thing. It just jabs like a dagger. And I think our elderly are somewhat susceptible to this. And it ought not to be that way. We use some very disrespectful language to people who deserve just the opposite the most. Like when you call your father my old man or your mother my old lady. This is a horrific, disrespectful language that I pray I never hear and hear. I never have, and I suspect I never will, but those things are unacceptable. And what Israel is doing to Samuel here in verse 5 is completely unacceptable, at least in my opinion. This is what happens when you slow down, you look at a text, you try to feel the atmosphere in which the thing is being said, you try to put yourself right into the picture, and sometimes you don't like what you see and you don't like what you feel either. Heartless smacks even of ingratitude. Now, you can imagine how Samuel felt. He'd given his whole life to these people. It's hard to be told very bluntly. Essentially what they're telling him is you're no longer wanted. You're over the hill. You're useless. We want to be like everybody else, so make it happen. It's essentially what they're telling him there in verse 5. You wonder if there could be any more difficult word for a man like Samuel, for any older person to accept than that. You're old, you're useless, it's time to replace you, it's time to go on, move on. Really an amazing thing to think about, especially the more you learn about Samuel. Right from the very beginning, there had been this special quality about Samuel, and everybody knew it. They knew about him, and they knew it about his work, not only as a prophet, but as a judge. People don't realize that Samuel was the first judge of Israel. Something that men had instinctively recognized, making his work not simply different. It actually went into the realm of outstanding. Look at chapter 3, verse 20, and you'll see what I'm talking about, the fact that everybody knew this. It says in chapter 3, verse 20, that all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, that's the northern and southern borders, knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. In other words, they didn't know it because God came down and said, "This is my man." They knew it because of the way Samuel conducted himself and the utter excellence of his life and ministry. This was no mean, ordinary man. He had a ministry that was to influence thousands, and the whole nation, whether they appreciated him or not, could not deny the impact that he had had for so many decades in the service of the Lord. Then in chapter 4 and verse 1, notice the word of Samuel came to all Israel. There was not a section from Dan to Beersheba and from the Mediterranean Sea over to the other, to the Transjordan area, that was not aware of the excellence of his life and what he was able to accomplish. In chapter 7 and verse 15, you read, Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. Remember, this is his mother Hannah had gave him over to the high priest Eli, and from a baby, he's being taught how to serve God, from a child. And no wonder he turned out the way he did. But now with all that record behind him, they're basically telling him in verse 5 of chapter 8 that we don't want you anymore, all right? And we're going to fill your place with somebody else, or you're going to make that happen. Thou art old. Give us a king like the other nations. The whole thing was to give for Samuel to teach them that they were a peculiar people to God. But no, they want to be like the other nations. And so Samuel, you know, he realizes he's old. He doesn't have to be told that. It'd be very hard for him to give up the only thing he'd ever known his whole life. He never knew anything else. It's not like he was a plumber or a teacher or a doctor or something, and then in midlife he switched over. He wasn't like Moses' situation, a complete reversal of fortune and of scenario. That wasn't that way with Samuel at all. It must have been very difficult for him to step aside to see someone else step in. Never easy to find that the very people to whom he gave his life are now basically clamoring to have a replacement. This can happen anywhere with any elderly senior citizen. We need to be very, very careful. It can happen at home. You know, you look at all the people's homes, the old age homes that are filled with seniors. And in some cases, maybe more often than we care to admit, these places are filled because the children won't care for their parents at home. They won't do it, right? It can happen on the job. This happens in church, right? It's the shadow of knowing that the work that you had done is just now no longer appreciated or even to the degree of forgotten. Then there's another dark shadow in the life of Samuel. It has to do with the ways that seem to have been forsaken. Notice in verse 3 of chapter 8, it says, his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside. And then in verse 5, you read of the cry of the people, make us a king like all the other nations. So both in the home and in the land, Samuel is having to endure some pretty hard emotional changes, things that didn't exactly go as he maybe would have wanted them to go. All those years of theocratic rule where God, through his judges, was ending and the monarchy was going to take its place. But what a hurtful thing. You know, his sons must have absolutely broken his heart. And this is what sometimes kids do to parents that are trying to walk with God. I mean, that phrase, just let your eyes sink into that. They walked not in his ways. It'd be enough to kill some people, you know. You live for Christ. You have kids to raise them up with the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and this is what happens. It could happen to anyone. These boys had new ways. They had better ideas. It wouldn't have mattered anyway. I mean, their new ways were not better. It says they walked not in their father's ways. They turned aside after gain and took bribes and perverted judgment. These were thugs, punks. They had been intended to follow in their father's footsteps, and there's something desperately sad in the fact that they turned out just the opposite. It's a devastating thing to happen to a godly parent. You have to wonder sometimes if the only way the devil can get his own people, especially in their old age, is to get them through their children. That seems to happen a lot. And believe me, if any of us have ever had opportunity to grow up in a godly house where your parents loved the Lord and proved it by their life, you are of all people most blessed. Absolutely. Very hurtful was the attitude of these people. Make us a king like all the nations. That must have stung. Terrible. I think it's possible to argue. In fact, an argument is made that the monarchy was in the plan of God of Israel before the foundation of the world. Well, that's true. It just wasn't true for that moment. And certainly not with the king that they got. That wasn't what God had initially in mind. You know, in Deuteronomy 17 and verses 14 and 15, God told these people, he told that second generation, Moses did. He said, when thou art come into the land and shalt say, I will set a king over me. I mean, God predicted they would do this. Thou shalt set a king over thee whom the Lord thy God shall choose. God said, I'm going to choose your king for you. You're going to have a king, but I'm going to pick the king out. Now, if that was so, then the sin of the people was more in the motive than in the request. Okay? So behind the request was the rejection of the authority of God and the desire to be like everybody else. Right? Conformity with the ungodly wicked all around them. It's the scourge and plague of the church. When Samuel speaks to these people, he warns them of the effects of the reign of the king. Right? He talks to them about a king which ye have chosen. Right? And it may well have been his mind that there was a king whom God had chosen. The problem was, we know who that king was. He was too young at the time. He was out tending sheep himself. We know who he was, the least youngest son of Jesse, the man David. But of course, impatience, insistence, unparalleled carnality, the insistence of these people, it lands them with Saul, King Saul, who from the outward appearance looked like a king. Tall guy, handsome, you know, head and shoulders of everybody else. And they also got all the disasters that came with King Saul as well. At home and in the nation, all the old ways seemed to have been completely forsaken. And Samuel's work forgotten and his ways forsaken. Right? There's a lot in that little tiny phrase, thou art old, make us a king. There's just a plethora of sadness in those words. Those are some of the shadows that are going to paint the sunset. And let's face it, there's sorrows, there's sadnesses that come with latter years of life that are peculiarly prerogative of that time. And I mean, to find all of a sudden that we're unwanted, I mean, that made Samuel's skies dark, you know, look more like a vicious hurricane on the rise than a nice smooth transition. The shadows of the sunset, and then secondly, the serenity of it. The hour of the sunset is very often the hour. This isn't true all the time, I think, but most of the time when the sun is setting, the wind will stop. It does that in Florida, I know. The wind dies down. It gets really, really still. There's no, the leaves of the trees are still. They're not rustling, you know. There's no leaf rustling. There's this quietness in the air, a calming. You look out on the Gulf of Mexico, it's like glass. There's hardly any waves. And it's the time of quietness and stillness. All right, and that's really the way it is for seniors as they get into that position in their life. That's the way it was for Samuel. There was going to be so much less to do, right? Life, the pace is going to slow way down. It would have been understandable if the next thing recorded was either his obituary notice or some reaction of bitterness. And Samuel was full of resentment. It would have made perfect sense to read something like that in your Bible. That would have been understandable, even though it would have been poisoned in his latter days. I mean, there may have been some resentment. I mean, he's a human being. There could have been some seething hurt and bitterness in his heart. We don't know that, you know. But it doesn't find its way into the pages of Scripture. And neither does the obituary notice, at least not at this point. Not for another 17 chapters. God's got a lot more to do with this man. 17 chapters until you read Samuel is dead. There's not a sound of any stormy resentment and bitter acrimony anywhere. And what we find instead, really, we find this great man of God, he's going to turn now quietly to another work that God had already laid out for him to do. More work, different work for sure, bigger work, and maybe the best thing that Samuel ever did. And from an already highly successful life. Now, what form did that take? Well, what you read about Samuel in other places is he had this amazing, and it was after this time, right when the nation asked him to make them a king, he begins this ministry of intercessory prayer that is just amazing. In chapter 12, verse 23, he tells the people, and this is after they told him to take a hike, basically. In 12:23, he says, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. An amazing statement, a statement of very high integrity and spelling the quality of this man. I mean, after all, there is at least one kind of work that nobody could ever stop the servant of God from doing, right? And that's the ministry of prayer. I mean, nobody can really stop you from doing that, to have that kind of ministry. And the verdict of history was one that placed Samuel alongside Moses in that realm. Really and truly. You say, are you kidding me? No. Like in Psalm 99, you can check it out for yourself. Psalm 99, verse 6, it says that Moses and Aaron, you read of them, among his priests and Samuel among them that called upon the Lord and he answered them. So Samuel is listed with Moses and now recently gotten right with God, Aaron, as a man of tremendous prayer quality, very late in life. And Samuel is a man that's full of burdens. You know, he's got a lot of burden to carry, particularly in his latter years. Not the burden of administration, not what Moses had to do. I mean, Moses was forced to delegate or he would have died, basically. But time for all that was past, and Samuel had a good sense to accept that fact. Not administration, he's going to now have this ministry of intercession. And it's to that ministry of prayer that Samuel is going to be able to bring all of the wealth of all his past decades of experience and all that insight that the passing of the years and the chances he had to prove God to be true to his word, all that time had given him. Now, if it's true, it certainly is, that more things are wrought by prayer than possibly the world could even imagine, then the best time, the best work, the biggest work that Samuel ever is going to do is now going to be made possible. The time and the strength that had been given to so much else, now he's going to put to this. And Psalm 99:6 is the proof of that. Right now he's got time that he never had before. Right, he's got more time to do more of this kind of work. All the turbulence that no doubt he had to put up with, the busyness of another kind of work, those were ended for good. And Samuel sees this, he recognizes this, and he gives himself to it, this ministry of intercessory prayer. He becomes one of the best there ever was at it. And surely this is the biggest job that any Christian can do, right? And, you know, people can read 1 Samuel, and if they'll slow down and pick out these kind of things, they can get great application for them, especially in your senior years, in your retirement years. But there's yet another kind of work that Samuel is going to find himself involved in. Not just the ministry of intercession, but he's going to continue on with a ministry of instruction. He says, not only am I going to not sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you, he says, the rest of that verse says, I will teach you the good and the right way. Well, I thought that's what he'd already been doing. Well, yes, but now it's going to ramp up. It's not so much going to be a public ministry, though. He's going to be pretty much out of the public eye. It's going to be a very personal, private, individual type of a thing. A ministry of instruction, of what we would call today discipleship, inspiration, encouragement, a ministry of personal counsel to a very important young man. And so we find that it was to Samuel that David went again and again and again. When David finds out that he's God's choice, he basically makes Samuel his surrogate father. Now, Samuel couldn't literally take the place of Jesse, but you find in the scriptures that whenever, every chance David got, he was in the presence of Samuel. He was aware of God's purpose for his life, and he was baffled and bewildered by the circumstances that really threatened his very survival, being hunted like a dog in the caves of the earth in Israel by Saul. Now, up to that point, he's not been anointed the king yet. David hasn't been. And so to whom does he turn? He turns to Samuel, an old man who's going to be his counselor, who's going to be his primary, single greatest encouragement. Everything that Paul was to Timothy, Samuel was to David. And when David finds his way to Ramah, it was to find Samuel surrounded by other young men who, recognizing the amazing worth and the wealth of Samuel's experience, they found their way too to Samuel's presence. And Samuel realized what was happening in the twilight of his life, this strategic work that God had placed him in, this responsibility for bringing into being the first of what would become the schools of the prophets. You read about the schools of the prophets. Samuel started the first school of the prophets. That's where these young guys were hanging out. They were hanging out with Samuel. So there's then this ministry that really only age, frankly, can exercise as long as it's willing to give it. And if a young person is smart enough and mature enough to be willing to receive it, those are big ifs. I remember when I first started out, you know, too many wonderful men. I've been saved for 36 years, you know, and I just think of the men most of the good friends I've had as Christians are dead. They're with the Lord now. It's amazing. I mean, probably 90% of them are gone. We're talking dozens and dozens of people, highly influential people in my life. They're all gone. You know, I stayed in fundamentalism my whole life, wound up in small churches. For the first 10 years, I was probably the youngest guy in the church everywhere I had ever been. Literally, I was. And, so these people passed on and went home to be with the Lord. But I think of the great privilege I had to sit under some of the... I mentioned to you my friend Hallam. He's just one of many friends. Wonderful preachers, wonderful men of God that I gravitated to, just like these guys did. I mean, there was no different. And amazingly enough, many of them gravitated to me, which made it easier and which made it even more enjoyable. Great privilege, great time, fun to think about those days and the benefit that I personally received from that. I listened to these guys. They would speak with all of the weight, all of the authority of, sometimes 50, 60 years of preaching behind them. You know, they were tremendous. They were fabulous. I remember just sitting and watching them, and I remember a couple of times praying, Lord, I wish I could do that. I wish I could be like them, you know. I really didn't know all what I was thinking, what I was wishing at the time, but I don't think that was a really horrible thing to want to do and be. I was envious of them, for sure. They had something that I saw lacking in myself and that I wanted for myself. But Dr. Alexander White, maybe you've heard that name, Alexander White, he's an old Scottish divine. He was an eloquent dude. Man, he could spin words like nobody else. But he comments on Samuel's age, I'm quoting him now, White says, it is only the old and the ripe and the much experienced and the men fullest of past service who can do Samuel's service for our generation and the generation which is coming after us. No amount of talent, no amount of loyalty or humility even can make up in the young, whether in young statesmen or young churchmen, for the wisdom and the experience and the standing and the influence of those getting on in years. White knew what he was talking about. He was a student of life, not just the scriptures. I mean, it may not be so much a public ministry, but a more personal and private one that's going to be carried out in the quieter days of anybody's life, right? But the partnership of age and experience and youth is one of the most wonderful meshings that can take place. And I can stand and say, yeah, that's true. It was a wonderful day in my life when these people started taking an interest in me, and I naturally wanted to have an interest in them. It was a wonderful, wonderful relationship that I had with so many of these men. I'll never be able to evaluate or thank God enough for the influence that these older preachers had on my life. A guy named George Duncan tells a story once of a guy who influenced him. He says he was this one preacher's aide to make these meetings. They were big meetings in Scotland, and they were trying to get these things organized, right? And they'd been talking with each other, and this older preacher, he swings around, and he says, "Have you sanctified yourself for me?" And George Duncan doesn't even know what he's talking about. He was so taken aback by the question, he didn't. It didn't even register him that the old man was quoting John 17 in verse 19. "Have you sanctified yourself for me?" And he began to pray. I mean, he began to explain to him, well, that's what the Lord said at the last supper there, right? Talking about his relationship to his disciples. And he says, "For Christ said to them, for their sakes, I sanctify myself." In other words, the Lord Jesus, the God of heaven, actually set himself apart in order to be a blessing to these shivering, quaking guys on the night that he's going to be slaughtered, you see. It's really one of the, I mean, and you think about that, and man, that section of John 17 there in the upper room, that verse particularly, it gets so overlooked because it's such a shocking statement that the Lord makes. He sanctifies himself for them so that he can be a blessing to them. Just amazing. And so he talked about how he never forgot that personal encounter that he had had with that older preacher. So anyway, we've noted the shadow of the sunset and the serenity of it, and now finally tonight, the splendor of the sunset. Sunsets occur, the best ones are in the summer, right? You don't get many in the winter, not out here anyway. But they occur at the most wonderful time of the day. It's a time when everybody's winding down, you know. And the Word of God speaks in very similar language about old age. In Proverbs 16, verse 31, it speaks of the hoar head, the gray head. It calls it a crown of glory if it be found in the way of the righteous. So what makes up the splendor of the sunset years in Samuel's life? Couple of very wonderful things. First, the Bible talks about the intimacy that he had in his walk with God. Really an envious thing. You have two times a reference that's made in those kinds of terms. If you're still in chapter 8, 1 Samuel 8, 21, it says, "Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord," as if God didn't have ears himself to hear. That's how tight he and God were. And then in chapter 9 and verse 15, it says, "Now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul came." So you have Samuel talking in God's ear. You got God talking in Samuel's ear, right in two verses within very close proximity to each other. 8:21 and 9:15. Check it out. So the point, my point is that Samuel and the Lord were so close together. I mean, when you you don't just speak in anybody's ear, right? When you're tight with someone, you can get that close. That's the way Samuel and Christ were, very close to each other. The older Samuel got, the closer he got, until in a very wonderful way, he was so close to God. You know, I mean, that language is used in the way a human being might treat another human being, speaking upright in someone's ear. Almost like you can imagine a whispering going on, right? Only it's not the kind of whispering that we, I mean, this is an intimate type of talking. And then the other thing that made up the splendor of Samuel's sunset was the quality of the work he's going to do so late in life. You know, it's very significant, I think, that the biggest job Samuel ever did, he did after they told him he was old and they wanted a replacement. That was the highest level of Samuel's service. Well, what job are we talking about? Well, it's when he finally finds David, right? He checks out six of Jesse's sons. None of them are it. And he finds David. And you look back and wonder, here's this old, ancient, retired guy, and God uses him to basically find the king after his own heart and the one who will be the legitimate forefather of the Lord Jesus Christ, the ultimate king. Now, it may be true that some of God's servants don't end well, but it's hard to imagine anybody that could have done any better than Samuel. After he had every right to be bitter and just disgusted. In fact, here's a wonderful thing. If you kind of just read between the lines, you really don't even have to read between the lines, because when the nation finds out that Samuel dies, right? They don't have CNN and MSNBC. They can't text each other. They don't have instant recourse to communication like we have today. So it takes a little bit of time for the word to get out. When the word gets out that Samuel's dead, the nation is stunned. It's almost like they woke up all of a sudden. What? We didn't realize how good we had it. And look over in chapter 25. See, right when you think, in chapter 8, my point is that in chapter 8, verse 5, it looks like it's over for Samuel. But you don't hear about his death till chapter 25. Look at verse 1. It says, all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him, including the ones that said, you're too old, we want you out of here, and make us a king now. Everybody is lamenting him. That's the serenity of the sunset. This ministry of the intercession that Samuel did, his personal discipleship of David, being a strength for this young shepherd boy who needed him desperately, just like he needed, just like when Samuel was a kid, he needed Eli, right? Same kind of thing. This ministry of instruction. Well, it's just a... I love reading about Samuel. There's so many other things we could have said about him, you know, like when he killed King Agag in a righteous indignation that is so unbelievably absent in contemporary Christendom today. But, you know, for every single one of us, some of you are already in your sunset hour. But if the Lord doesn't intervene with the rapture or something unforeseen happens to us, then, you know, our sunset is going to come, every single last one of us. And what we need to remember is that the sunset is the prelude before the dawn. That's what we need to remember. And we, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 15 or 20 years old or approaching 90. You know, you're either there or you're going to be there. Most likely. And I think it's good from time to time to pay attention to these very seldom discussed topics, which these narratives gives us opportunity to do, see how people handled their twilight years and the scenarios and situations that they found themselves in. Samuel, the great, great man of God, tremendous man of God. He must have been some... What's this bleeding of the sheep I hear? And just the way he addressed King Saul there, you know. It's almost like he had a sense of humor, yet he was a man of tremendous purpose as well and a guy of infinite quality and conviction. Tremendous man. Okay. Yeah. I wonder if David learned how to be a man after God's own heart from watching Samuel. I bet he did.